So boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, fathers and daughters, moms and sons, we are a few weeks into the new year, and I'm wondering how many of you have already forgotten about your New Year's resolutions? Well, we haven't forgot about any of ours. Our resolution was to rid this planet of vermin scum like politicians. Instead, we're going to bring you some quality guests, some great people that you can sit back in your fat old chair and think to yourself, I really identify with what this person's talking about. And so, before we bring on today's guest, let's get down to a little bit of business.
Bus driver here. This podcast is brought to you in part by Gopher Case. Always out and about, wanting to capture that moment and capture the best photo? Get yourself a Gopher Case already. Head over to gophercase.com. There will also be a link at onthebuspodcast.com. You can check out our site as well. Click on the Gopher Case link and head over and use the promo code ONTHEBUS. That's ONTHEBUS. And ask yourself, are you on the bus? I know Daniel over here has a Gopher Case. Daniel loves that thing. He uses it every day. I have the 6 Plus. It's not featured on mine. But once they have that feature, I will be getting myself a Gopher Case. The podcast is also brought to you by Organifi Green Juice Powder. I just recently got back from Mexico, and I can say my digestive system has survived Mexican water and all the little bacteria I may have gotten on some produce or even some side road meats. I ate at a lot of meat stands. Now, I didn't see a lot of vegetation. I saw a lot of vegetation in the jungle, but not vegetation I could eat. Luckily, I had my little green Organifi green juice packets, and I was able to get those little superfoods and nutrients I could get every single day that I wouldn't be able to find on the road.
Like moringa.
Moringa, chlorella, spirulina, ashwagandha, turmeric, all those little things, as we might be talking about in the future, have little inhibitors that unlock your genes and allow you the best possible chance to fight off cancer, all right? And like everybody says, fuck cancer.
And don't die.
So head over to OrganifiShop.com, or you can click on the link on our web on the bus podcast. .com and use promo code BUSDRIVER, that's all caps, one word, and get yourself a 15% discount. And the podcast is also brought to you by Onnit. Onnit, like the bus, is a human optimization website. They're trying to sell you and give you products to help you make the most of whatever it is you're trying to do. Trying to get the most out of your daily work at the office? Try some Alpha Brain. Want to get the most out of your workout? Get some Shroom Tech Sport. Has a superfood in there, a cordyceps mushroom that is incredible for cardiovascular health and endurance. I think it was first discovered by Chinese scientists, or Chinese farmer actually. He had a bunch of cows in his field who were jumping around and going crazy. And
Jumping cows.
So they took the mushrooms. Some scientists came down there. They tested these mushrooms and saw the amazing endurance properties that these cordyceps mushrooms have. And they're great for immune health as well. So again, that's a double whammy. You're looking at immune health and sports. You're trying to hack and get more and more and more out of your physical ability. Go check out onnit.com. Click on the link on our website, onthebuspodcast.com. There'll be a link for Onnit. And get all your shopping done. Fill up your cart. And it goes to help support this podcast. And lastly, but not least, we want to thank everybody who has shopped through our Amazon portal at On The Bus Podcast. There are so many of you who keep this show alive, running, and not dead. So whoever has done it, thank you so much. If you haven't and you'd like to, please head over to our website and click on the Amazon portal. You can favorite the page so you don't have to go through our portal every time. You'll see a little user ID tag in your URL and fill up that cart and get your shopping in. Want that one-click shopping toilet paper? On the Bus Podcast likes that. Want to get your one-click computer case? We love that. So head over there on thebuspodcast.com and one click through the Amazon portal and you're good to go.
Our next guest is a serious, serious person. Way more serious than Brandon, who is never serious. You can never take Brandon seriously. Just like Rolando, the kid who got the hand job, or the hand job episode. You got the hand job. Yeah, you can't take them seriously either. But seriously, our guest coming on the show is one of my best friends in the entire world. I met him a few years back while I was playing poker living in Vancouver. Adam is not just a poker player. He is also a gamer, a marketer, a foodie, and what I know him best for, social media. The kid makes lists and then posts them on the internet. He does some incredible things and knows how to talk with people. And now, batter up.
Okay.
Adam Levy, let's get the small talk out of the way, shall we? Skip right over it. We're not going to do it at all. We're going to get right into the question about Phil Hellmuth, right?
Right away.
It's the first thing we're going to talk about. I'm curious how Phil might have reacted to you off screen.
That's actually a good question because he, we were friendly before that. Like, everyone, we were all just like, oh, we're playing with Hellmuth, this is fun, you know, and then that happens, and we all, it kind of like, we took a break a little bit after, and we came back, and he was just like, that was the producer, like, he was just like, the producers told me that was the best tirade ever, like, I feel you've outdone yourself, and just like, okay, but like.
So he's playing into, so.
So he was like playing into it, and he was like proud of his tirade. But at the same time, I'm just like, dude, like, you just yelled at me for 5 minutes. Like, okay, guy.
I mean, for those who don't know, there's this famous YouTube clip, or it's from ESPN.
Yeah.
It's from ESPN in the main event in 2008.
2008,
when Adam got 12th place. And
no, that wasn't that. No. But, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A different time.
It was a different place? Time. Where'd I got 48th that year.
So solid for the World Series.
Yeah, multi-runs. So Phil Hellmuth goes on this epic rant about, what is it,
Queen 10 of clubs, yeah.
Yeah, Queen 10 of clubs, and it is definitely Phil's, or one of the most famous tirades he's had.
I would say it's like I'm not even being biased. I think it's legitimately one of the best hands that have like happened in poker in like the past decade or whatever. Because like it's just like, I can't tell you how many times people are like, oh, actually, I was in San Francisco. At that like rager party for like the all you can drink, get dressed up to the nines party. Mm-hmm. And I went up to these basketball players that were just randomly there because I was like, dude, you're taller than me. Like, there are too many tall people here. Like, I'm 6'3", you're making, like, come on. But there were like 30, 40 like basketball guys who were like 6'7". There was a girl who was like 6'4". I'm like, this is like, come on.
This is your kind of party.
Well, I actually did go up to that girl, which was good. That was like a success. But they knew me. They were like, you're a poker player? Like, are you the guy from, like, they knew me from, like, the Hellmuth hand. And it's, like, remarkable how big a hand that is, I guess.
Yeah, it was like, poker's prime time when that happened. Like, this is post-moneymaker. It's been building and exploding. They were still letting people go wild on TV. They still let Phil go wild on TV.
Yeah. But propelled me to I got a UB deal from it. Granted, it wasn't, you know.
I'm on the outside here. Why was that such a good hand? What were you guys like?
Well,
describe the hand.
Okay, so basically, I played a hand. All I did was just like, we have so many chips in front of us. How much you know about poker? I could break it down to you on different levels.
Think about our guests.
Okay,
our guests will know a lot, and some of our guests.
So
will
like,
know
basically, he made a raise, and I decided I was going to call with this hand.
It's a pre-flop?
Yeah, okay. It's a pretty average. It's a pretty like, you know, normal standard call against someone and Phil was playing very, very, he was playing a lot of hands. So the flop came like jack nine, deuce, two club, or not two clubs, but two diamonds. He bet, small amount. I call, I have a straight draw. Turn is the eight of hearts, bringing the second flush draw. He checks, I bet, he calls. The river is like a six, like nothing.
But I mean, you had the straight right there, right?
Yeah, like, the nuts. Yeah.
He's the best hand.
Yeah. I still have the nuts on the river. And after I bet the turn, he then leads into me. Like, I think it was like 60K and like...
Hold on, lead in.
Like, as in
he
like...
He made the first bet.
He made the first bet, yeah. And I'm like, well, I have the nuts, I raise. And then he called and just like went off like, how could you play Queen 10 of clubs pre-flop? Like, when it was like the most standard thing ever. And he just went off on me for like 3 minutes probably before I even got a word in. He literally got up from the you can watch it, it's great, but like they edited it, but he got up from the table, walked to his wife who was somehow on the rail on day four of the main event, like, you know, respect, you know, and
what
He came back, called me an idiot a bunch of times, told me I couldn't make the top 200. I did. And then eventually I was just like sitting there like, dude, picture trying, like, I mean, you're a basketball player for Syracuse, right? Like, I don't know if Coach Boeheim yelled at you for like 3 minutes, but maybe that happened.
No, but the first time he ever did talk to me, it was pretty demeaning.
Yeah.
And big jab at me.
Yeah, but you kind of know it's going to happen sometimes. So you kind of sit there, but you're like, God, like, this is like brutal, but it's also a different thing. Like, he's a coach. This is just a normal, like.
But even Coach Boeheim, if he's coming at you and he's going to, you know, who is this guy? I don't even know who this guy is.
He's like.
Can we get someone who's not retarded? Like, if he's talking to you and he's giving you a comment. Kind of got to say, okay, maybe this guy actually cares and he's getting on me because I'm a better player.
But this guy was just kind of doing it because that's like his shtick, but also, but at some point you're like, all right, like, I've had enough of this.
Well, a lot of gamblers, don't they have like a persona they try and convey? I mean, at least the one
at that time, yes.
Reverend Squeaky.
This was like his, Wynette. Yeah, oh my God, Squeaky. He played a very few amount of tournaments and he made a pretty big name for himself in South Florida, like, just like playing, being loud. I mean, he made
his stone tablets.
He was called the
carry at the table. The best.
It's like it's entertainment.
It is.
Yeah.
That's why there's a guy this year named William Kasufi. He just was like, he had such a personality, but it was like he was actually taking too long to act, so people got really frustrated with that. And like it was like you have to balance both those. The guy Helmuth, the guy I played, he didn't miss a hand during his entire tirade. Like, he, like, went around and then still was able to kind of come back for the next hand.
So consciously aware of,
it's like, hilarious.
Of what he's like, doing
that's
and
the thing.
How to balance.
His tirades are kind of masterful. Like, there was this one guy later in the day that was from Finland. And he was just, like, the guy played a hand, standard hand, whatever. And he just, like, said, like, idiot from Northern Europe. Like, the specifics are, that's masterful to, like, in, he, like, actually, he, I mean, and he's also cultured enough to know exactly, I mean, yeah, granted, everyone should know where Finland is, but I'm just saying, like, it's still, like, very specifically Northern Europe.
It's trash,
you know,
talking a poker.
Trash talking, but it's, like, really well done.
Yeah.
You know, but when it happens to you, eventually you're just like, all right, like, I gotta say something. And I said something that was actually, like, it was a poker reference to someone the year before said aggressive call in like a big forum like fight and with like other poker players where you can't make an aggressive call. Like they're two different things. Like if you're calling something, that's weak by default. And aggression is like betting or raising. So when I said that to him, and he was just like, oh my God, this kid, like, I don't know this guy. And he just said aggressive call, like, what an idiot. It actually just made him even more irate. And that was the only thing I said. I just, like, stacked my chips and sat quietly until that. And it was a pretty cool moment in my life.
Mm. Yeah, definitely, for sure.
Love saying definitely for sure.
Definitely for sure. Definitely. Sometimes you need those filler phrases,
right?
Everybody,
for sure.
I think every single person has a filler phrase of some kind.
What about globular?
Globular, we've talked about that in the air before. Globular is way more than a filler phrase.
I feel like
it's a life phrase.
I want to work like galactic in there, but it's kind of along the same lines, but it's hard. You really got to commit to these phrases, though.
Yeah,
that's what I've noticed. Like,
you can't nanny around it, right?
When did you start playing poker?
2003, kind of when all these everyone like the original boom happened, which was like we're watching Rounders. Have you seen Rounders?
I've seen it.
It's a great movie. Like Matt Damon and Edward Norton Jr. Like how did
I
that?
I can tell that looked like Edward Norton way too often.
I don't really see it.
You don't see it?
You must
see Luke Wilson though. Hey, Luke Wilson.
Yeah, a little bit. But
neither of those.
Like, just like
don't paint
very
a picture
small.
For listeners that doesn't exist.
Yeah, he's
get
a
your
mix
own
between Luke Wilson
out.
And Edward Norton Jr. But no, and then there was that, and then there was like it was like the perfect storm. Like there wasn't really social media. There was no social media. Mm-hmm. People would just watch ESPN, but it was the summer, so there wasn't really much going on.
MySpace is gone now. MySpace 2003.
Yeah, MySpace must have been going like barely.
I definitely had a profile then.
You're right. But then, so it's like Rounders, all of a sudden that came out in 98, so the cult kind of following of that. And then Chris Moneymaker, honestly, he won the main event for $1 million in 2003. So like, it honestly seems like, how could that be his last name? And he's like wearing like these Oakleys, black, and it's just kind of a perfect scene. Like, he's the amateur who just beats this guy who's like the pro, and he's the pro's got like a, he's got like, he was like Sam Farhan, he's got like this cigarette in his mouth that he's not smoking, and then he's also got like this like absurdly kind of like
who is the guy who used to wear the chameleon glasses, kind of fat guy,
the Fossil Man.
Oh, Fossil Man, that was 2004.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's like, couple that with Moneymaker, getting it started, and then literally all my Magic player friends.
Okay.
I played Magic for a long time. Ultra nerd. They started playing poker, and I was just frustrated because I just wanted to keep playing Magic. And I was in Gainesville at the time, but I kind of like couldn't wake up to keep my job at Olive Garden. Like, I was working, going to like community college, and I was just like, I just couldn't get the alarm to wake me up. I'd put like four alarms and I'd sleep through. And eventually the boss was just like, dude, you're great at your job, but you can't wake up, so you're fired. Like, I've given you so many, you missed like four shifts. So I missed that.
Take some breadsticks and run.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely got to get some Fajul too. But there's a lot of funny like things that happen at Olive Garden. Like,
what got you into poker? Was it Magic itself?
It was. So basically, when I was in games.
Can you describe Magic real quick for...
It's like you know, Pokemon card game?
Yes.
Yeah, like, I think like the generation, like you guys, you're like 5 years, 6 years younger than me. And you guys got Pokemon, whereas like I got the Magic, because Magic was like the original collectible card game. It's literally a dude named Richard Garfield, who was like a Harvard professor in like game theory and mathematics. He just decided he grew up like playing board games and wanted to figure out a way to combine chess with like a little bit of luck. And he came up with this, and it's actually brilliant when you think about it. He took basically like baseball cards. I was obsessed with baseball cards, so it kind of made sense. Baseball cards, they just sat there and gathered dust, but he actually put the words that you could use these cards and make them collectible and play with them. So like, it just was like, I think the rarest card is called Black Lotus, and it's like, honestly, it could be like $20,000 from like 1993. I have a card that's worth like $1,000. I have a couple cards like that.
So you go to tournaments and you play versus other people?
Yeah, well, yeah. Initially, it was like a card game, and I played it in like middle school, and it kind of boomed. But then everyone was like, it's the Satan, demon. There was like kind of like a, you know, demonic
to
element
so
to it.
So much hate for playing poker, like, you know. You had your little Pokemon circle in like 5th, 6th grade.
Yeah, but who actually played Pokemon? Like, not many people actually played the
game.
I did.
No, there were a lot of people.
I had my coin to play with the coin flips. Okay, you have this attack times 2. If it's 2 heads, okay, your attack is 60. A lot of people, you actually need energy cards to throw down when you were playing with. People didn't do that, though.
Yeah, they did. No, that's the thing. You're right. They did,
most
but they
we
didn't.
Know, yeah. Yeah. In school. Didn't do that.
I think it was, yeah, you're right. And it was like, it was so shunned upon that it was like, all right, I guess I'm like a freak because I play these games. But it's like, I actually am just bored. And like, you know, I grew up playing video games, and now I can do something kind of like it in school and like be social with it. It's actually, Magic's actually one of the best games you can, Magic and Poker are one of the best games you can play to be social with other people if once they get the barred entry of learning it. Like, it's
live, yeah. With when you play versus
Magic,
other people, yeah,
might actually be the best game I've ever played. Maybe Rocket League is up there, and like, yeah. But like, I think, like, you know, Hearthstone, how it came out. So Hearthstone
huge.
Is
huge.
Yeah, Hearthstone's massive. Blizzard created it, but Blizzard also has failed multiple times with other card games, with like World of Warcraft stuff. But Hearthstone came out, and they basically just took the model of Magic, but used the Blizzard kind of savvy to make it better. And like, honestly, I think like Magic is still like is massive, but Hearthstone is crushing it because you can play on a phone, you can play on a Mac. Like, I can't play Magic on a Mac, which is absurd. But when you play in person, there's just kind of like a fun little like camaraderie to it with Magic. Like, you go, there's a tournament like called Grand Prix, they get like 2,000 people like
the gaming
around
community.
The world.
So basically the gaming community, the gaming community is getting massive right now, right? In with Twitch, with development of EA game, what is there?
Just with careers being just popping up with it. You can play video games for a living, especially in Asia. where they have they fill up entire arenas, like soccer stadiums, where people are playing the video games, like 4-on-4 against each other, and people are just watching on the screen, cheering, yes, yes, go green team, kill
them.
Dude,
that did, I actually, that's kind of like what I'm kind of doing in LA a little bit. I ran, and granted, it was the first one I ever did, but it was like a viewing party for Dota 2, which is like League of Legends, which is basically what you're saying. You're literally rooting for the red team or the blue team. And
it's nuts.
But it's like once I learned how the game works, it was we ran it. It was cool, you know. It was fun. But then on Sunday the finals happened. Like I ran it on like Thursday, but on Sunday the finals happened. And it was one of the best games I've ever watched in, like, I don't, like, in any, like, type of, like round. Like, I mean, it was arguably, like, better than, like, a really good basketball game or something. Because it was, like, once I understood what was going on, like, I still didn't understand a lot of it. But it was, like, it was just, like, I asked a friend who actually does know a lot about it. And he was, like, that was the best game of the year. Like,
But, like, would you say it was a strategy or, like, style of play or the rules or what your... What would you say it is? Not your focus, but what's your drive in the game? Like, you look at basketball, it's to score more points than the other team.
Oh, right? This is just to, like, beat, like, it's called Defense of the Ancient. So, you're supposed to defend your ancient, which is a temple.
Okay.
And then, like, you just get, like, your heroes.
That, so, like, capture the flag.
Yeah,
like, video
but it's 5-on-5. It's 5-on-5, so you have 4 other, like, humans that are playing.
If someone could have told me growing up you can play capture the flag for a living... Yeah, I would have wrote that down, and I would have never done anything else in my life.
It was so hard to get a manhunt game. Right.
That's what Elky was doing, like in like 2000, he played poker. He was in South Korea.
This, yeah, but I mean, I think the major distinction here is that you have like people like us, me and Brandon, who grew up playing the physical version of these things, and then you have the people who maybe didn't get picked in the sports, or their mental acuity is higher than their physical acuity, but they still like are driven by the same things that other humans are driven by. They're still driven by competition and women and you know all those things where humans
women
are driven by.
All,
it's, I had to throw that
it's
in
kind of hilarious though that you could literally grow up just playing a computer game and then where you somehow the worlds are now colliding a little. Like they're not colliding just, you know, but they're kind of meshing a little bit where you could be an athlete. Like that kind of happened with poker though. If you look at it, there's a lot of former athletes that really excelled at their specific game but had an injury that ended up like kind of making them have to make a decision, but they want to be competitive, but they couldn't really be active. Like,
it's
you
human
know.
Drivers. We're driven by the same force. And I feel like a lot of people don't want to put them in the same category. Like you look at some of the older generation, they'll just look and they'll go, oh, they're gaming. They don't see that there's some underlying force that's guiding and governing like that decision to play that for a living. Like we are competitive. Most human beings are competitive, whether it's like I want a better job in the workplace, you know what I mean? Or I want to beat out this person for that increase in my role. Or I want to...
we still have our primal kind of instincts.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's just like, instead of us, like, killing, you know, like, ox or whatever, you know, like, I don't know, like, maybe but that's not the best example. But
I didn't see that one coming.
It's going to be like woolly mammoth or ox, but hey, I'm not, you know... But yeah, instead of that, it's now we're just competing in other farms, but we still have that in us.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that this is a good discussion for a good roundtable for that kind of ideology. And maybe if there was a way for us to share, because I constantly think about why don't other people see it that way? Why don't older generations see things like from a biological standpoint? And so sometimes when you have like people like us having a roundtable discussion about it, maybe they can open their eyes a little bit.
Comes down to software. You make a choice. We cannot update these older people's software. They can't see or they can't compute why this is beneficial or rewarding.
Yeah, I don't think that's true though. Like, I think you can, but you just
you need can to, yes, you, but then there's some that can. That's
oh
when
no, there's some. Like, I feel like there's like some things that like just were
that euthanasia.
I don't know how that comes
in Asia.
Just
I took
but,
it there.
But I feel like
speaking of eugenics.
All right, let's steer. Oh, I don't know if we have to get that deep just
no,
yet.
No, we won't. No, this show is not ready for that.
Let's dive.
But I feel like if you, there are certain people who are just like, I'm checked out for life. Like, you know, once they check out and they just, they're just like, I don't, I just want to watch my sports and whatever. But there's a lot of people who, I feel like my, you know, my mom's always been like trying to figure out like what's like cool with like, you know, the kids or something. And personally me, like I'm always trying to figure out like what is like, just because I think it's an interesting way to see what like the future generation is doing.
Yes.
And also it's a good way to somewhat stay connected.
So where do you think that the future of some of these industries is going? Like, how do you see them evolving into the business side? Like, you understand the gaming world, so maybe talk to us about business, gaming, what you're doing with marketing with that.
I mean, I just think it's we're just living in esports is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's
esports.
Yeah.
Well, so to transition this a little bit, so you played poker for a long time. You've done pretty well. I have a segment later in the show. We're going to have some of our users ask some guests. But right now, Brandon rolled his eyes at me. Write that one down. No. So you recently you kind of mentioned earlier that you transitioned out of poker. So how was that transition? And are you doing something? Is it to find something you're more passionate, or why did you get out of poker?
I think it's kind of passion. Like, basically what happened was, I guess when I started playing poker, I literally was like, this was like the first thing in my life that I'd ever actually truly succeeded at. Like, I was like decent at Magic, but like it was never, you know, and I could wait tables, and but school was, I just didn't want to be a part of school for whatever reason. And there were a lot of things my parents were just like, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. And I just would like be like, no. And so poker was the first thing I really truly ever succeeded in and like excelled at, which was great. But once I kind of got there, I feel like it was kind of branded to me that like I wanted fame and I wanted money. And that was kind of once I kind of got like, very small amount of fame, it was like, okay, cool.
It's like that's a youthful mentality, I think. Like, I'm sure we all went through that at some point.
Like, I wanted to, and then I was like, you know, watching Entourage, you're like, whoa, you know, it was a stupid mentality. Right. Entourage did it. And I was like, I got to move to LA. But I mean, I did and I loved it. But I was just kind of, it was an immature, kind of silly way to look at it. And I feel like I never took the game as seriously as I maybe should have. Although I definitely played a lot, but it was like not enough studying, too much playing. And I think I burnt myself out. And I wanted to get out when Black Friday happened, which is the day that, like, April 15th, 2011. I was actually going to Coachella that day. It was kind of a weird day. But that was the day that the U.S. government came in and was like, you can't play poker anymore in America.
Froze all the accounts. Yeah. I won't say took everyone's money because most people got it back years later.
Yeah.
Some of the sites didn't.
Yeah. I lost about like 35K, and there was about 150K I had online at the time.
I'm sure we know some people that had hundreds of thousands or even millions.
Yeah, that's like not that big a deal compared to some of the people that like lost a lot of money. But
why did they come in? What did they come in and say that you just can't gamble anymore, or there wasn't a proper way that the government to get money back from them, the companies?
It was kind of just like it was not regulated, and there was no they were not U.S. based companies, so the U.S. did not like that all this money was going elsewhere, and they just wanted to have their own, like, and I think a lot of the casinos kind of pushed for it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But the casinos were like, oh, they'll come to the casinos now and start playing, and it's like, yeah, but that kind of died down after a couple of years of that. And it's like, I mean, actually poker's still going well, but it's not like the online, what they didn't understand was the online the online poker generated a lot of live poker, because you would win these tournaments that would take you to the casino and then you would spend money. And they didn't understand that, and they just wanted a piece of the pie. And now we're kind of just like, we have two sites you can maybe
I think the
play
Department of Justice, like, my take on it, and there's so many different ways to interpret it, but my take on it is, does anyone know what the Department of Justice does for revenue? Like, it seemed at the time like a revenue grab.
I never understand it either. Like when they say we're gonna,
where does the money go when they get drug dealers' money? They keep it.
Recently, they took. They said Barclays, you are $12 billion fine. But does that money go back in somewhere?
Yeah, like does it go back to the?
Really, why is that dispersed to everybody right there?
That, no, so in, so on the poker sites or like PokerStars is pretty fair in a sense that like if you are caught cheating for some specific event, what they'll do is they'll take the money and they'll distribute it back to the players that you got cheated by. The Department of Justice is the opposite of that, right? They're, and you can see how easy it is for them to have incentive to want to shut things down, shut down like anything that would be considered illegal. If they can get money out of it, then it funds them, then it gives them more jobs or more money, or they could even, you know, do things illegally themselves. And
yeah, but it's not to do a better job. It's just to get wealthier.
Yes, that's the, that's why there. I don't understand the governing body, so
remove,
I'm in no position.
Remove the three-letter organizations.
Yes, remove the
three-letter. Too much bureaucracy.
I'm so sick of acronyms, to be honest with you. Acronym Ohio, get out of here.
STFU, man.
Oh, speaking of acronyms, I think that, and this is a pure whirlwind conversation change, but I think that language is, like, people, you look, they're like, okay, I'm going to bring this back a second. My parents would complain, you're not using proper language, you're using slang. I think slang is just the visual evolution of language. Like, you're looking at how evolution's changing in a snapshot of it happening. Like, if we look back,
like, selfie, like, it became, it was slang, but then it got used so, I think it's just like, slang is something that doesn't, new language that doesn't get used that much, but at some point it just becomes like a part of the language. Like, literally, that is in the dictionary.
Yeah. Our English language today, though, at least the American English, it stems from African Americans, though, and would it be called slave language? No, not Afrikaans. Just like the kind of dialect, the way most African Americans spoke as they learned English, you know, throughout the formation of our country, that slang and all these words that we use. I have to look up a common word, but it just comes from slave talk, so to say. And most of our language comes from African American.
I'm always fascinated by, I was fascinated as this. Like, I remember when I was in seventh grade, the word mad became slang and like very cool. Oh, that's mad dope. Like, I always loved the evolution of that. Like, who thought of these words? Just like, was it just like a group of people just sitting around smoking blunts and then all of a sudden they just started saying goofy stuff and it just kind of took off?
I think that what you're talking about is good. I bet there are some linguists out there who study kind of how language evolves. I recently read or listened to something
like Gusky.
About
like our friend Gusky. He just starts like
yeah,
like
there's
cool,
interesting people who use words and then catches on.
Yeah.
And use phrases and then they kind of, they're not immediately pervasive, but they're organic. They're like, they grow organically. People find them interesting. Globular is clearly one of those words taking off. And you create descriptive words or whatever, and they, and people pick up on them, and then they use them around other people. And I guarantee, like, if you could look at a time map of how a word evolves, which I think they have on Google, by the way, you could see that probably, I would guesstimate, and this is purely arbitrary, but like the first 50 years of a word are like very minuscule organic growth.
And then and at then, some point,
at some point,
it takes off.
Like,
it's kind of like the tipping point.
It moves from the Northeast down to South Florida, and everyone in South Florida is amazing. Or you have the explosion of growth, which is like a rapper who uses like Grey Goose in a song, and then everybody buys Grey Goose.
That's some great marketing right
there. So we're doing viral word marketing. Remember that. Awesome. That's why we have a podcast,
is
so
a
we can get Globular out there.
Globular. Sorry for talking over you.
Go ahead. No.
Awesome. I do that occasionally. But awesome, I think, is one of the... I used to think it was... So it is the only word that hasn't really gone out of style. I think maybe it's slightly less used. Dope, I think, is still just consistent. And it's remarkable when you think of all these
words.
It's
too strong for me. It's too strong for me. That's dope.
I love that word.
Ah, it's so good. But like I felt like douchebag came in real hot, and then it just was like, all right, like kind of like.
I think
like,
dope definitely comes from.
That's definitely from like
culture.
I would say it's from hip hop, like the origins of hip hop, like in the 80s.
Hand in hand, probably.
Or early, like late 70s. Early
I got that
80s.
Word for you too. It's Ebonics.
Ebonics. So Ebonics is rooted in American language?
Yeah. And it comes from black slaves who spoke native African language mixed with English language. And it's where like, we get a lot of our slang words from. Probably something like dope.
Yeah, I mean,
hip hop.
Yeah. I actually watched a on Netflix. There was like the hip hop, not the I've Get Up. The Get Up is great. You need to watch the Get Up, and then you also need to watch the Hip Hop Evolution, which is a documentary on kind of the stuff behind like Grandmaster Flash. And the Grandmaster Flash actually referenced Kraftwerk, and which is like he was referenced for Planet Rock. You know that track. Like
so it's rooted in electronic, is what you're...
No, but okay. That was just like... But I just thought that was an interesting tidbit. Like, wow, like, you know, this is still rooted in, like Grandmaster Flash, even, like, you know, he respected other forms as well. And, like, but
what,
yeah.
What year was... So what year did hip-hop
I think it's get like, in,
initiated? Like, when did it first...
So 70s? I think what happened, it was at least from 50, what 60s? I got gathered no, from these 70, two 70. Shows was, like, the Bronx kind of had a lot of, like... There were
cool
a lot
of... Gang.
Yeah.
No, that's probably later, to be honest with you.
That's later.
Yeah.
Really? But
I would guess that it takes like, it has like a 10 to 20 year, like small cultural evolution. And then.
And it was like after disco kind of died. And.
What is that? Hip hop?
Let me. Hold on. Adam made a clear mistake there. Disco never died.
Fair. It hibernated.
Yeah. We have a party coming up for New Year's called the Dapper Disco. You both are clearly going to be there. And it's formal wear with disco flair. And that's just my point, that disco never dies.
I agree. I love disco.
So
my
here we
bad.
Go. No.
It has a rebirth.
South Bronx, 1970s.
Yeah. The 70s. And there were like a lot of... It was just kind of like all of a sudden there was just a lot of angst. And like, I guess it was like there were just a lot of black people that were just put in like one area.
Well, they were building those overpasses. They were moving people's housing all over the city and cramming them into more...
What, projects?
Project housing, yeah.
And so from that kind of like, you know, when there's a lot of angst and energy, they kind of have to put it somewhere sometimes. So it's either like you fight or... And at some point, I think, you know, you just started listening, like making music. And I think Grandmaster Flash figured out a way to kind of do the like era on the turntable. Yeah, he started figuring out how to scratch. And he'd also take the breakbeats instead of like the actual song. He like where there's words, he would take the breakbeats like, and then God, with the bongos and stuff. Oh man, there's one I'm thinking of I can't really like, you know.
But even like channeling that into, I think that's where you get like MCing. You get
people
like
that's where it all
dance
came
fighting,
from.
Break dancing. And like you're saying, putting your angst and energy towards something else. You fight, but you're doing it by showing off and demonstrating your dance.
That's exactly, yeah, that's how it happened. And then it was like, there were some other guys that they mentioned that I had never heard of that helped it move along. And then like, I guess Run DMC with the Aerosmith kind of, or that the Walk This Way was massive for
that collaboration.
That collaboration was huge, and Run DMC was big, and it was a
collaborations
super
interesting. Are definitely
do you think
very important.
Martial arts is a new way that we're going to channel all the angst and the dormancy of energy that lays within
us? No, I think we're doing it right now with electronic music.
With electronic?
Yeah, like I feel like when you need to, like the first time I went to EDC, and granted that was the first time I rolled, so it was
2014.
Like, it was the second time I went, but the first time that I actually like went with like a group and like with.
That's when I met you. Yeah,
I don't think I met you there. I met you 2015. You were in
2015. Okay, yeah.
So I met Adam the first time I met Adam. So I was at Vancouver.
Yeah.
And
after Black Friday.
Right? After Black Friday, so we met like 6 months after 2011, and a friend of our buddy of ours, Joe Weissman, who you know, Brandon, I was living with him at the time, and he goes, yeah, I have a friend of mine. We're going to go get some food with him in downtown Vancouver. And we get to like, I don't know how we describe the place, because I thought it was like a loft where we were upstairs and we were like overlooking this down area.
Yeah,
and it was like a booth. And I get up there and I'm thinking like, oh, I'm going to order something, right? And Adam is like, I'm ordering for the whole table. And, like, this is my first family-style experience. I'm like, this kid's going to order for the whole table. All right. He orders. I don't know what you ordered, but my opinion immediately of Adam was the most high opinion you could have of someone. He brings out – he served me, like, one of the greatest, you know, meals that I've had in my entire life. Tons of different things. So, dreamy. I get to pick out from different people's plates. Who knew you could do that? Right? Like, Jesus, Spanish people have it right with their tapas.
Yeah.
And it was like – it was ever since then, I was like, well, if this kid's going to be serving me up food. So when I go out to eat with him, it's usually just, I sit back, put my feet up. You don't actually put my feet up, but Adam orders and I just pick whatever.
Can we arrange this? Yeah, I mean, I don't really do that much anymore, but I'll schedule.
But
I would, if we were to go to Eating House, I would go to Eating House. I want to go to Eating House actually before I leave.
This is my favorite, like, and that's one of like my favorite restaurants.
They have like this foie gras chicken and waffles. It's foie gras batter instead of butter.
Where is this?
It's in Coral Gables. And bacon syrup, and it's, oh my god, it's the most decadent dish I've ever had.
Can I book you for lunch tomorrow?
They have something called dirt, right? It's dirt.
Yeah, it's like a dirt cup.
It's a for dirt. Dessert. It like looks like they gave you a pot of dirt with like plant, a flower literally. Growing out of it, and it's just. It's dirt dessert, and it's
caramel, Oreos. The dirt is the Oreos. Then there's caramel ice cream, like mousse.
Brought to you by Eating House.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's, all right, yeah, down. But
okay. We'll set that up, yeah, after this.
But, yeah, electronic music, I would say that when you go to these things, there's like 150,000 people like every night or 100,000 people every night. And it's like, what are they going there for? They're saving up money and from their like daily grind to just kind of let out a release. And they're not necessarily doing it by like dancing. You are, but they're just doing it by dressing up in such a free manner, you know, with like, you know, just not wearing not that much or putting on like, you know, some fun glitter or whatever. I don't know. Just like all these costumes and stuff. Like just going to conventions with like-minded people, I feel like are going to Comic-Con or something. I feel like that's a big thing.
It is a bit tribal, but I'll give you that one. It's just such an amazing place for free expression. Like you say, with people dressing up in their outfits, dressing up, painting themselves, things that they normally would not be able to do. But they're, like you said, they're with a bunch of people like themselves who they can be comfortable around doing things they can't normally do. And actually being able to express who they are, something that they like to do.
It's hard to
do. Unfortunately, yeah, you can't do that. I mean, I'm even like that. We were talking about sharing food at a table or just passing a water bottle over. Like someone's like, no, like, what are you doing? Don't pass me that. Just, I don't like, want to share food.
We're just hanging out.
Sharing food right now.
It's okay.
The closest human interactions and connections you get, just sharing food.
I agree.
It's so ceremonial.
It's a good feeling.
Yeah. Amazing.
Like, oh, you like what I'm eating too? Like, it's nice. And you get to experience my experience, I guess, in a way, for sharing food, which is cool. And I mean, I guess that's kind of actually a good motto for my life. But unfortunately, people don't really listen when you tell them to do stuff. Like, hey, man, I did this awesome thing. You should do it too. And they're just like, all right, cool. And you literally, like, it just doesn't, I don't know.
We all don't being like told what to do. Anytime we get to go out and do other things,
you just have to do it, and then people are like, "Oh wow, look what he's doing! I want to do that." But if he's like, "You got to do this," they're like, "No." Mm. It's like kind of just a reflex, I guess.
Well, you even look like that's just happening with DEA, all these drug laws, and especially this music festival scene, this place of free expression. You know, now normally people can warm up and get comfortable with people who are like minded or do similar things to them. But now they sometimes ingest a psychedelic or any kind of, what do we call it, a drug, something that can help loosen them up. Because you can even say alcohol is a drug, something that's going to lower their inhibitions, make them more relaxed and comfortable. So now they feel even more at home and relaxed, connecting with people who are like them, doing things that they can't normally do. And then you'll hear, you know, whether it's your parents or someone like government or an education, no, you shouldn't do that. This is the way you're supposed to do it. And I think that really plays negatively with young kids and gateway drugs, especially with marijuana. Somebody, say, some kids that try as young as 12, 13, 14 years old, they're going through puberty, they're trying to figure out who they are, they're exploring their bodies, they're just trying to figure out what it is to be human, and then they try something like marijuana, like, wow, like I feel relaxed now, you know? I don't feel all this angst. I don't feel this fear. I don't have to worry. I don't know what's happening to my body. I got to worry about getting a boner every day because this thing just works at an incredible rate and I got to hide it around women. Now, what else did my parents lie to me about? What else isn't
going
to hurt me and going to cause me? And they have all these rock star mentalities. So maybe they were wrong about this too. They haven't done it. They told me it's not good. I'm going to try it now.
I feel like it's like a struggle between like, you know, letting your kid be free, but also like being a parent. And it's like, if you go too far one end, then it ends up being like, but at the same time, I feel like you just need to frame it in a way like, listen, you're gonna make mistakes, or I don't really even know, but I feel like it's kind of got to be like, you, like, I can't have you doing all this stuff, but I definitely want to like loosen the leash a little bit. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, I'm going to come down on you when you are an idiot.
It comes down to that balance, you know. Yeah. You want to have some kind of control over who your offspring becomes, but then also trying to figure out, you know, I can't have the same exact things happen to me. But for my kid, you know, wow, I remember making that mistake. Do I let them make that mistake, or do I let them have it as naturally as possible and be there just to catch them or guide them whenever something
happens? It's physics. For every reaction, there's a reaction. So if you tell the parents or the kid to be like, don't do this, he's probably like a bunch of times, he's probably going to do it. Equal or opposite
reaction. That's number two, right? Newton's second law?
Every single parent ever went through this. Think about that. Every parent ever has gone through, like, how do I raise this child? Where do I balance? Like, those questions get arisen. They're, like, naturally functioning question of being a human.
Keto from the start.
But now you have something like the internet, like, keeping parents on their toes. Maybe I have to actually educate and learn, and I have to stay ahead of this thing, because why are my kids going to listen to me if something with all the information that man knows today is in the palm of their hand? And it knows more than I do. Why is my...
It's got to be more complicated than ever. But I feel like you could say that every single, like, every day. It's just more complicated than ever for anyone, really, to live. Oh, but great. It's, like, kind of awesome in that respect. Like, it's definitely more complicated, but that's just because there's more, like, options and more, like, choices to be made.
Because we're all technically, I think, we're all nuts. We all are in our own heads. We're all sometimes worried about what other people think, what other people might do. And we act a certain way because we're
worried. It's almost like, how can you not be nuts, you know, to a certain extent? Like, it's just kind of like this cycle of, like, my parents, like, dealt with this from their parents, and then their parents dealt with this. And, like, you know, we all have to kind of control ourselves to a point, but we still have the experiences and the way we've been nurtured, and also just evolution kind of like, holding us back in a way, I guess. Not holding us back, but, like, still, that's kind of just, like, what you're saying, like, the competitiveness that stems back from...
No, it definitely limits us in a way. Our physical nature. Us,
but ultimately, we just need to be better. We just, as long as we're good at kind of addressing our emotions and kind of, last week, someone posted something, and, like, it's, like, it kind of annoyed me. And it was like a friend who I valued his opinion, but it was like, it annoyed me, but it was like, you know what?
What was the post?
It was about the hot sauce thing. And it was the top five hot sauce or whatever.
Oh, and, so let's go back a second. So Adam, you're really well known for making these lists, right?
Yeah.
He makes these.
Kind of just stumbled upon it, but then people were like requesting me to make lists on Facebook.
Yeah. So he makes these incredible lists. Like, he'll take top 10. What is it? So, I mean, give some descriptions of some of the lists that
I made. A top 10 games, top 10 fruits, top 10 games, number top 10 one. Top
10 fruits
is,
was famous, yeah.
Yeah, that was banana number one. It's just a perfect fruit.
Didn't agree with his list at all.
Well, you did say mango was up there, and I put that number two.
Mango's number one. There are so many, there were so much disparaging comments and disagreement and, like, debate, and it brought about a lot of hot. Good combo.
Yeah, like, so the my favorite one was the top 10 games, and Mario Kart is the clear number one.
Definitely.
Mario Kart 64. Like, just, like, I don't know how ever Nintendo did it, but I feel like that's just the best game that I've ever played, and it's, like, but Rocket League not far behind, Magic not far behind, and, yeah, those are, like, that's pretty much my top three, but...
So what other...
Sometimes it gets pretty heated.
Yeah, it gets heated in there. What other lists... Give us a little taste of what lists we might be looking out for in the future. Or are these, like, you know, on the cusp, you just kind of do it?
That's the thing. It's like...
You don't think about it.
Yeah, well, it's like when you get requests, now you're forcing it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's maybe what I ran into with...
I could see you becoming a professional, like, list maker, raising hot topic to, like, across the internet.
Top five politicians.
Top five politicians. Well, Newt Gingrich is number one. I used him a lot in categories the other day. That's it. Yeah. That's the only reason I threw his name out. It's just his last name starts with a G. He's a Newt. He's a Gink.
There's no fig.
Yeah, but I don't know. So those are fun, though. They really engage people, and I feel like people in the last one, the hot sauce one, people did not... They kind of forgot that it's like about the engagement, but I did learn a lot about hot sauce. Like, and I feel like there might be a hot sauce boom happening because, like, all of a sudden, like, see, here's the thing. I thought I was ahead of the curve with hot sauce for a long time, and then I kind of started slacking with it, you know, where I just like, all right, I got these hot sauces. I've had a lot of different hot sauces. Cool. And then I was like, all right, I'll just throw this out there for
the, you know, what were the top five? What were the top five hot sauces?
I mean, it was like green Tabasco, the jalapeno Tabasco. Which is like, I think...
Specific, are we branding here, or you just said green Tabasco?
No, it's jalapeno, like, Tabasco.
Wouldn't put that in my top 50.
Yeah. Tabasco company, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Here's the problem, is if you have a top five that's too exclusive, people are just like, cool, they give you the thumbs up, they don't engage, and it's like, you get 7 likes. So, like, you have to kind of have that, like, medium to, like, you know, like, if I let's make it a little more broad. Marketing. And one was, like, Texas Pete, which was, like, very relevant to my life because when I was a camp counselor, like, all of our campers, like, loved Texas Pete. And it was, like, I gave them a nod to it. So, it's, like, so you kind of have to find a fine line. But ultimately, people just take things a little too seriously at times. Apparently, hot sauce.
Too much control, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, but now. Someone said something that was like kind of like this list made me angry.
The thing is, when you post something like that, you learn a lot about the person who responds.
Yeah,
you do. That is a caricature or a condensed version of that person's personality.
It was here, to a T, for that person. And what I realized, it kind of made me annoyed, but I'm like feeling this emotion, and I'm like, okay, instead of me being like, oh, I'm annoyed, how am I, like, I just was like, let's just feel the emotion, let's take it in. I feel like that was a big step for me, where it's like, instead of you being like, oh, I'm annoyed, like, let's like, you know, type on the internet or something, it's like, no, just like, let that like kind of simmer a little bit so you can understand what this is and feel it, and then like, eventually you'll like come back when you're feeling a little less annoyed by that and be able to rebuttal without like emotion.
But even letting that person like go back and look at that, because sometimes it takes a day or two or maybe a year, and now you got these things like these timelines that jump back and you can say, oh my god,
I said that,
I sound like a fucking idiot, I can't believe I yelled at Adam about fucking hot sauce. Let me call Adam up. There's somebody not even realizing it. Maybe it takes 5 years.
I think you can just from Adam's perspective, you can just kind of like ask yourself the question for you, like when you're making a list like that and people are putting responses and things you don't like, I don't think you can get mad. I think you can kind of say to yourself, like, what did I learn from this post?
No, like, that's that. Yeah, no, I was also like, I'm learning a little bit. And that was one of the things that I learned was hot sauce is a lot more serious than I thought. I might not be as savvy at hot sauce as I thought.
Exactly.
People take things a little too seriously online because it's just like, you know, just relax a little bit. And I learned a ton about hot sauce. Like all these different hot sauces that I now need to try.
And you can look at it from like a poker perspective. Whereas if you look at poker from like a results-oriented perspective, like what were the outcomes? Then you're not going to be a winner. If you can look at it from like an outside perspective, of almost a disassociated perspective, and say, okay, what did it take for me to reach these results? And what can I learn from those results?
Yeah.
And like disassociated is, you know, I think that's used in so many different fields, like finance. Like I was listening to a podcast the other day, and a finance guy was explaining that the thing that he does when he's advising his clients is he doesn't like look at trends. He looks at what people are saying about them. Yeah, he looks at what people are saying about the trends, and he doesn't study. You know, if someone asks, this was so profound when I heard him say this.
He's so intelligent.
When someone asks, when someone says, like, I don't understand, this shouldn't be happening. That's the phrase. This should not be happening. He said that I go against whatever that person's. Because if that person's model is, this shouldn't be happening, that means they have wrong information and it's continuing to happen for some unbeknownst reason to them. Therefore, then the opposite holds true because they're missing some kind of detail from their model. If you're a poker player and you're and someone constantly goes up, is beating you with like a thing like Jack, like let's say like a medium type hand or something.
You lose with aces or something. So you just always think that you're losing with aces because like, you know, you're getting unlucky or.
And if you ask yourself, there's a question you can ask yourself, which is related to that question, you can say like,
maybe I'm playing aces.
Maybe I'm doing something. if you ask the question, I don't understand how that person's winning. Like, why are they winning if they're doing that? You need to look at yourself and say, okay, I'm the one doing something.
How can I break this down?
I have the perfect analogy for that.
Yeah, go.
You say people on the left looking at Brexit or looking at the rise of Trump. What are we doing wrong? How is this happening?
That's like, a good, no, that's a very good point.
That is
actually
a good.
That's
a
very
good,
valid. It's the most relevant thing I've time I've ever heard.
It's more like, what are you doing wrong? Like, it's not. It's not what are we doing. It's what. Like, what are they doing? It's what are you. You need to figure out.
Like Michael Moore, his whole speech in Detroit.
It was
one of the most perfect painted picture. Like, what are these people actually?
I don't know what the speech was about.
So he had a speech like before, like a week or two before the election night. And he wrote, it was a really, really moving speech about how Donald Trump is going to win the election. And there were certain points throughout the election, like when he came to Ford Motor Company and said, he made a speech there to all these people who were about to lose like 2,000 jobs. And no one else is there saying, we're going to do this now. And I think it's much more in depth. You know, you look at education, get these guys better tools in order to be a bit in the stronger profession. But it's like, no one's helping these people. This guy coming here and saying, I will make sure that no one is going to take your jobs or Fords are going to be made outside the U.S. ever again. Like, that's going to touch somebody. That's going to move somebody and telling them, say, you're wrong. You need to get a better education. Do all that. And he was able, he's going to win the election. Be pulling all these stunts like this. Going to talking with working class people who are, you know, being told by people on the left that, you know, if they don't like this stuff, they're just... they're not up to date with the times, or they're racist, or they're dumb because they're not from this area. Even though it's like they take up a majority of land in the country, but you look at the more people who live within, you know, cities who actually did vote, the populace for Hillary Clinton, but that mass in the middle, that electoral
college. The flyover states is what, like, you know, but it's, I agree. It's a whole different world, but I hope that things kind of mesh a little more and people are...
I think it's a good learning experience.
It is, because I think that what's going to happen is that, like, a lot of people are going to see that, you know, it was just a stunt and it was kind of BS, and now these people still might be out of jobs and they're going to get angry and they're going to be like, screw this guy.
I would agree with both of you completely that, number one, this is a time for people to go, okay, wow, we thought for sure the Clinton was going to win and they didn't. Okay, we were doing something, like, we're looking at this whole thing wrong. Like, there's something else going on underlying.
Yeah.
And now how can we make sure that it works together better in the future should be the question that they ask next. And then lastly, I think that, I'm not going to go there.
Well, I do think that I would say it's a small saving grace. No, it's a reasonable saving grace. Is that Elon Musk and I think Travis, the guy from Uber, the CEO of Uber, forget his last name, but I think both of them are on the advisory board for Trump. And it's like, I don't really care. Like, they got in. They have some opinion. And it's like, and people are viewing it as like, oh, they're for Trump. And it's like, no. They're just like, they need to kind of just like... It's so good that Elon is in there, I personally think, because now solar, you know, and just all these things, there's good, they're going to be able to present it. And it's like Trump might actually, I don't know if he can actually physically listen to anyone, but like he might actually, something might be affected by them being there.
Yeah, it angers me a little bit that people would be upset over that, because I think
when read an article on Pando Daily that irritates me. That I don't know.
They're just what irritates you?
Pando.com or whatever. It's like some Silicon Valley website, but for whatever reason there was a guy who just wrote like, I really wanted him to just like stick it to Trump, and it's like, dude, like
nothing
no.
gets done. Like,
what
when you have two completely opposing ideologies or opinions or anything, collaborating allows you to bring together two opposing opinions and make things more improved than they might have been if you have one single perspective.
Would you look at 2008, like, and that's the funny thing about Republicans now saying, well, you know, we all have to come together and we got to do this for Trump. You know, we got to come together as a nation, you know, got to put aside our differences. When Donald Trump was the main person running the whole Obama is not from America, he was born in Kenya, he kept this whole thing going for 6 years that he's a birther. And you look at all the other people who said Obama's a monkey or like all these ridiculous things, and we're not going to let him pass this bill or pass this law. The House and the Senate Republicans holding all this up for the longest time. And it's like such a contradiction. Like, well, I think it's time, you know, we did this for 8 years. We did it to him, but now you guys got to appease us. Now I don't take a side in any of this, but it's just funny to see the contradictory.
Yeah, definitely.
In that, and people are just like, "Weren't this is the guy who said, you know, this guy's not from America?" Complete 180.
I'm about to do a complete 180 here with this question. Adam, you have an incredible story from the PCA, the PCA, involving a famous musician. I'd love for you to share this story. I forgot it.
Okay.
It's a basketball story of some kind.
It's a great story. It's a very odd story, but this is kind of like how things happen to me. So I went to the PCA, PokerStars Caribbean Adventure in Bahamas. It's literally like a hop, skip, and a jump from like Fort Lauderdale, where, you know,
30-minute plane ride.
Yeah, like not even. And so I went with my brother and like his best friend this year. It was like 2011, January. And I like we go, we get in. It's like our first day there, you know, before anything starts. Like, we always go play basketball. Let's go play basketball. All right. There's a court next to the gym. A bunch of online players are playing there, poker players. So we go to the other side of the court. And as we get there, this kid who actually I see him now, he's like D Hilton 12 or whatever online, and I can see him and like his brother Jonathan. I see them at like tournaments now, but I didn't know him at the time. He's like, "Yo, well, you can play with us, but that's Justin Bieber over there." And this is at the time where like it's 2011, so I've been seeing him on Twitter, like the top 10 trends, like Justin Bieber hashtag. Mm-hmm. But I don't really know much about like him. I just know that he's like kind of like becoming a thing with the teenagers and those damn kids.
And then eventually the world. Yeah.
Listen, I dated a girl who was into him. This is like in college. And I can sadly say that I took her to go see the dumb movie. I sat through that. I lowered myself.
Oh, I've never watched the movie.
She was a believer. But, she was a believer. I took her to
believer.
The movie.
Respect.
No, it was the only person.
No, disrespect. But, so yeah, like he's like, "Yeah, he's over there." I'm like, "Okay." And then there's just like a big guy just kind of sitting there. He's probably like 40, 45, just sitting on the bleachers alone, just kind of there. And it's like the kid, like someone who looks like Justin Bieber, and then this guy just kind of like watching them. I don't know. And so like, all right, we start playing ball. He's super small, and I'm like, I'm in a relationship at this time, so I'm probably like 260, 6'3", 260. Like I'm at my like peak weight, I'd say. And we start balling with Justin Bieber, and he did not pass the ball. I was like, "Dude, you're like hogging." Like he was ball hogging a little bit. Like he would shoot and be like miss and be like, "Ha ha." I'm like, "Bro, pass the rock," you know? But he at some point I kind of like bumped into him, and I was like, "Sorry, man," like, because I'm a big guy, like I'm not trying to fuck up this kid's career, you know, like break his arm, like I know he's like gonna be blowing up. And he's like, "You know, like might not be able to make my next show," like I said, "I'm sorry, bro." He's like, I'm like, "I don't even know like if this is a joke or not, but like okay," and like, "My bad." And then few minutes go by and the same thing happens again, and I run into him and I'm like, "Seriously, man, I apologize, did not mean to do that." And he's like, "It's okay, tickle tickle." He literally audibly said those words to me and then like tickled me like on the chest. I don't know, this happened, whatever. It was just kind of like the weirdest, oddest story.
Did you confirm
ever.
It was Justin, or is it still someone who
it was 100% Justin, because
he filmed Justin Bieber tickled him in the middle of a basketball game. Yes, that's what happened.
He was like 14, 15, so it's like kind of like I can still have like the childish, you know, kind of boy, like
don't
one,
butter it up, like.
I don't know, but hey, maybe, you know. But this is, he filmed the baby with Ludacris there. Okay. And he was like hanging out at the Paradise Island that week at Atlanta, so I have no idea.
4 years later, he played in the main event. Standard. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but he does play some poker, like 1-2, like Borgata or something.
I've seen those tweets.
Yeah, that's a story. I don't know. It doesn't seem real, but it happened. Like, I swear.
Where in the Caribbean was this? This is PCA Terminals.
Bahamas. Like Atlantis. Bahamas. Nassau.
Do you still play poker now?
Yeah. But like... well, it's kind of like... I kind of go through the... Or like, I'm retiring. But the thing is that you can't really ever retire because you still need...
Never.
Like, you still need to... Like, A, there's just tournaments that roll in the town. You're like, I still have these skills. And I'm still making money whenever I'm... Like, if you're... You know, like, I'm confident, like, whenever I play in LA, I'm making money. Mm-hmm. So it's like, knowing that if you just spend a little bit of time doing that, it's like hard to just completely like give it up. Like, I want to keep playing poker, but in a lot more of like a casual manner. But of course, now that I'm living in LA, I don't want to leave LA because I fucking love LA.
You said it's like your tribe, you know, it's something you go do, people you know, you're comfortable around, and doing something that you're really good at. It's your craft.
Yeah, but like it's like now I just need to go play it because like you know, while I'm building other things, connection, network, my like, you know,
takes time.
It takes time. Like, I just have to play just to, like, you know, keep that going. So I don't, you know, because LA is like great, but it's also expensive. But yeah, so I'll play, but that's not the end game.
You're not fully dedicated.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what the end part of, like, to put the bookshelf. What is that thing called? You know, in the library, bookend. Sorry, here we go. You need the bookend on the story?
So that way the books don't slide over.
Yeah, like to like end the story. You're like, you know, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, you put one like tilted a little bit? Or is that
no,
just...
No, it is. It's a book stamp.
No, it just goes underneath the... Yeah, it goes underneath it. It's called a bookend, I'm pretty sure. Anyways,
I don't know. Learn something new every day.
Last time I was in a library was a long time ago.
But, I wonder how they're doing these days.
Yeah, I don't know.
I still check my books out.
I don't know. I'm curious if... Yeah, like, we should just go in there and yell a couple times. Just see what happens.
Library, yeah, that'll be a... Braille Mongol Society part round 3.
How much longer do you think librarians have as professions?
I mean, but the thing is, you can really get some interesting resources in there, but at the same time, it's probably not that long.
They used to get made fun of, though. Remember, like, I think that was a thing.
But college libraries, like, that's like a place of like to study and be quiet and kind of like, you know, but like public libraries, yeah.
Mine, the one in Broward County is great because they have like a great ebook collection. So anywhere I was traveling, anytime, I could just go on my Kindle, find a book, and they would check it out to me. I didn't have to be in America, and it's a free book. Gave me a good time stamp. You have 21 days, so you have to check it back in. So okay, it's a reasonable enough time to get a book done. I can focus on it because sometimes they'll make sure like there's only like 2 copies. So if you get on hold, that could be like 2 months until you see that book again.
Hmm.
You want to finish it in that 21 days. That's public libraries. They're slowly innovating.
Yeah, there you go. That's good.
We're going to transition over to another segment that we've done a few other of our shows where we have guests who phone in some of their questions that we have. So I'm going to start with...
No one actually used the phone to do it. Like, hey, on the bus podcast...
You'd be surprised.
Leave a message.
You'd be surprised. Yeah, DM doesn't really work, so they call in anonymously, of course.
Yeah,
yes. Anonymous. So anonymous question number 1 from Nick. Does the amount of money you make affect your level of self-love and confidence? And also, do you feel like you make the right decision transitioning from poker into,
okay,
you know, a little bit outside?
So the first one, I would say it did initially when I was when I wanted fame and money. But once you get there and you kind of just spend the money, you realize that I feel like Kanye wrote, there's a line in a Kanye song, I forget what it is, but it's like, it's something basically like money, like once you get to, like it's, yeah, it's just not about fame. Like once you get the fame, like money doesn't mean as much or something. I forget exactly what the quote is. I probably shouldn't have even gone there because I'm bad at quoting things, but you live, you learn. Anyways, I do agree that I only care about it as a means to just kind of like build, like do things and be comfortable now. Whereas when I was younger, I was just like, make money, money.
Make money.
Yeah. And to answer the other part, I am every day, I'm so happy that I've done something to get myself to do something. So I've done something else besides poker, even though I haven't really done much yet. I'm really just pumped about it and pumped for like 2017 and just like doing different things and using like doing using different parts of my brain. Like, I've done improv out there. Like, that was super cool. You know, all these things that I'm doing out there, it's just like schmoozing and having a cold call someone or going to a bar and be like, hey, I'm this guy. Like, that's stuff that I've never had to do in my life. Like, hey, can we use your bar? You know, just
so novel, like, experiences.
What?
You're going through some novel experiences that you never got to experience. Like,
yeah. Also with poker, I feel like I did it was like kind of like you can live in a bubble just because you don't have to go to work. You just kind of go see your poker players, the friends, and you just live in that life, that lifestyle, which is kind of, it's cool, but it's also kind of absurd at times where it's just like everyone's just like credit card roulette for like $1,000 bill or whatever, which, yeah, technically it is neutral EV, but like it's when you put all cards into like, you know, there's six people at a dinner and the bill's, you know, $1,000, we'll say, and you just put your cards in and whoever picks it has to pay it. So technically over time it's neutral EV because you're never like everyone's like kind of ordering generally the same amount, but it's also like
mathematically long term everyone will even out.
Yeah,
in this game.
But it's like the long term really doesn't happen as much like when you're just like not with poker players very much, so it just becomes kind of like this is,
it ends up being a one time thing.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
And it's also just kind of annoying to like, it's like the emotion of losing $1,000 in that one instance, or if you get unlucky a few times, you're just like, this is dumb, like, you know. But yeah, I'm super super pumped where what I've done in the past year, moved to LA and like living on my own, like cooking and trying to eat healthy and be healthy. And it's just like I'm meeting like all these awesome people. Just
people you would have never crossed paths with.
Yeah, like just like random. Yeah, it's just I'm just super super pumped and super happy that I made this decision kind of serendipitously. It just kind of happened, and I literally, if I had not moved when I did, I don't think I'd even be in the door with my job, because like it's a very very busy time right now. But luckily, when I moved in October, I was able to kind of get some FaceTime with the boss and kind of get some like runway to start and like onboarding.
Question for you. Do you ever feel soulless for knowing you make money from people, or did you ever feel soulless from taking from others for a living?
I mean, that is a...
That's like a general concept, you know, I think, that times, a lot of people think.
I think I actually do sometimes. I think that's maybe sometimes why I do feel a little bit of remorse occasionally. But it's also like you have to remind yourself, this was their decision. They did this. Like, they ponied up money just like I did. They're just playing the game, and it's their fault they're not as good as me, or they're better than me, or whatever. It's like, you know, like we all had this decision to do it. So once that's done, you can't really think about that anymore. But it does feel bad sometimes when you know that this guy is like really in need of it, and you're just like running really good, and you just two out him and then win a flip for infinite, and then like,
isn't he's that just out. Like socioeconomics of evolution, like a present day thing? Like, if you are not don't have the skills or the knowledge, and you're gonna play against someone that possesses that, you know, and you're gambling money and value, it's, you're not going to get it back, but I don't see how anybody could feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's, no, you really can't, but it's also like, you know, I guess it's just like, you know, just being like a good person, because like when you win something...
Morally.
Yeah, you're just like, here's $1,000, just getting shipped my way, and like you can't, like, you know, I'm not going to be like, yeah, that's right, you played that terribly, you know?
Yeah, you're not going to rub it in.
But still, you feel a little bit of like, you know, a little bit of like...
He'd be a great poker player because he would rub it in people's faces, him.
Yeah, but Brandon that's would competition. Rub it in it's like face. Instead of competing, you're competing for a resource of green paper that has value.
Well, the thing is that the hand is the competition. Once the hand is over, it's no longer part of the competition, kind of.
Like,
it's
talking like, about the money that you're going to win.
Yeah.
I think the comparison for me is like, imagine you are just an average golfer and you get to compete occasionally with other average golfers for cash, and everyone puts in money. And then sometimes you're also competing with people like Tiger Woods in his prime.
That's the beauty of it. Yeah, the barrier to entry is literally money.
Yeah,
it's
sometimes,
not like you need to be invited get like be a professional. You just are like, I have $10,000. I'm going to go play the main event.
If you want to put, if I could put up $2,000 and I know that Rory McIlroy is in the field versus me, like, am I going to do that? It's up to me. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to, but I might if there's like a third or fourth place prize and I know that like, okay, I'm skilled enough to maybe get to there, and then occasionally Rory doesn't have a good day and I win. And I think that's how I do the comparison of poker in a sense of like skill, in how much I view skill as in the game.
Yeah, like there's a lot of people like, it's actually kind of odd that there's a lot of celebrities, like big celebrities. I mean, well, Michael Phelps played for a bit, and like Aaron Paul played the main event.
Ray Romano.
James Woods.
Hank Azaria, like Kevin Pollak, like Jennifer Tilly, she loves poker. You know, all these people, they just, it's just the opportunity to like, to just play with money for that amount of money is kind of cool to people. And that's kind of the draw, which is kind of keeps poker always relevant, like as like still a form of income.
Yeah. And because there is an added element of luck that does separate it a little from golf. There's that element that you can beat that person. Like even if it's a small, if you say like in golf that there is a 5% element of luck, there's not, but let's say there was a 5% element of luck where they like will move the green around or move the field, the edge around. Like I think you'd find more people playing with Rory McIlroy because the element of luck has been added to the game. Mm-hmm. And that gives you an extra percentage chance to get luck in your favor while he gets it not in his favor.
I think Magic is the best like game from a game standpoint. I think it's like just like a card game. It's the best card game that I like have played. However, I think poker is the best balance, has the best balance of like money, like the money you can win with the amount of luck, and then like with the actual like if you were to just play poker for just for as a game, like it's not that fun, like for no money.
Yeah,
just back and forth, it's just like useless, but
not fun at all.
No, it's not a fun game.
I mean, it's gonna come down to like, that for in sports for me. If I'm not putting a DraftKings or making a FanDuel lineup,
well,
like,
that's
so
true.
Much more exciting.
Oh, it is. But like, so yeah, like that's, it's so when you put money in it, but there isn't the luck is like a little too, that's the thing. The amount of luck still in poker is really like a good balance. It gives people hope, but also skews people's mentality if you win and your ego right away. If you win and like, it's like, that guy, like, he's just,
well, that's just the fault in us humans that we don't look at chance. We look at it as like, oh no. It's a 50-50 shot. If it didn't happen, the last three times, I'm due this time. We're gonna
like
make
the
that
singularity, there won't
it's
be
the
poker.
Gambler's fallacy.
There won't be any poker because
everything will be solved.
Yeah, Radiolab, I think they did on that. It's the gambler's fallacy.
It's called the gambler's fallacy. Yeah. Yeah, a friend of mine, he bets Red 23 constantly. And
is he from Chicago?
No. It's a friend of mine from down here, and he is one of my really good friends, and he always fucking wins. You've never seen anyone win so much, and he operates completely under the gambler's fallacy. Like he will sit and wait and say Red 23 is coming, and that is a mathematical fallacy. But yet he constantly hits it, so that just adds more and more and more to his belief. And if I've tried to have like that conversation with him, like
you can't,
you cannot have that conversation. Like that in someone's brain like that. I know even poker players that fall into the gambler's fallacy like hardcore, and you can't even give them statistical reasoning on
I always play that hand.
Yeah.
They're probably happier in life.
That person
I had that when
life.
I started playing poker, I had that. Like I would just listen to people and be like, no, I wanna like reinvent the game, screw aces, king ten's my hand, or 9-7 suited. A year into playing, I think I played like top 10 hands, and then like 9-7 suited, or maybe not a year, but like a few months into playing, it would just be like, got all these like aces, kings, and then like boom, 9-7 suited, spades, favorite hand.
Yeah, that's,
and it's just like you just have these dumb little
king
like
king jack off.
But that's the beauty of poker is that you work out all of these fallacies. I feel like if you're an intelligent or
exactly.
like you come at not intelligent,
you're
but you're open minded.
Yeah,
the awareness, and I think poker's actually taught me like a ton about life. I think. And
it's
kinda,
so applicable to
really
many
is.
Real life scenarios.
In a lot
yeah.
of situations, like I just sometimes I forget that people don't think the way that I might think in an average situation because I've just played so many hands of poker, and people just haven't really ever done any of that that type of critical thinking. Or,
it is. It's
like,
critical
way
thinking.
You
and
analyze each situation,
being able to sweat it out. If you haven't sweated it out before, you won't know what we're talking about.
I don't know what that means.
Don't know what it means? Just sweating out a hand, like you got something. You know it's the best hand. Someone's betting, they're betting heavy, they're pushing, they're shoving.
and you're there like, what does this guy have? Or you make like a terrible bet on a sports game. And you're just sweating.
It's a sweat.
It's a steam phrase.
Very popular word.
We're just like you're sweating it. Sweat. Okay. We got a DraftKings sweat. Like,
oh, don't get me on a DraftKings.
But what's interesting is with poker, the culture, the amount of words that are actually permeated like mainstream culture or like sub mainstream, kind of like tilt is used in poker, esports everywhere, Hearthstone, Magic. There's like a lot of like random things like aggro.
Is that made big by poker?
Very well could be. All in, and then there's just like some other random words will just like pop up and be like that or credit card roulette. Football players play that.
It's filtered into because of DraftKings, DFS, because of
a lot of poker players.
Sports, what do you call them? Daily sports, right?
Mm. DFS. One day fantasy.
You're not locked in. That kind of language has the way that they built those games, which have infiltrated the random communities across the United States. They built those games based off of the same way that poker.
Yeah, the format. Like if you look at PokerStars, the way that it's like the lobby of PokerStars, it's modeled, or DraftKings was kind of modeled after it. Almost.
All the tournaments, the way that same they do rate, payouts,
$100 plus nine. That's what it used
the way
to
that
be.
They built the games, how you're going to play versus other people, is the same thing as poker, and it still just baffles me how like we consider one, you know, but. That's for another day and time. One is illegal.
Just arbitrary, like, this one's illegal, but this one's legal, but like.
There's I'm not familiar with the litigation behind it, but there can't be some kind of reasonable or logical explanation where they say, okay, this one is legal for this reason and this one's not legal for this reason based on like science or statistics, or I'm sure that you can come up with a logical explanation.
I think they actually did rule that DraftKings was technically gambling, and
what do they rule for poker?
DFS, or no? It was considered gambling because I think by the definition, I don't know. It's been a while since I've kind of kept up on it, but
it's the same thing that's happening with the DEA categorizing CBD oil, even marijuana, as a Schedule I drug, and they recently just did that with. And it's like, how upset are people actually? If you are not willing to go down, protest, or have some kind of...
Wait, is Schedule I bad or...
Schedule I's the worst.
Bad, the worst.
There's no medical benefit from using these substances.
But there is from this oil, right?
Exactly. So you look at, for example, who are these people that we have elected or put into a certain placement of power to tell us what is right for us or wrong for us? Or with the gambling aspect, this is gambling and this isn't.
It's kind of like a hit to all the places where marijuana is... legal, so that they can like curtail the industry a little bit. Or
exactly,
something.
But I'm trying to make that comparison with the gambling.
Yeah, no,
and it's just nuts. Why do we?
Well, because there's no casinos that really deal with daily fantasy sports exactly. Like it's not like they're not taking any business away from daily fantasy sports by operating online, mm-hmm. as opposed to like the casinos playing online. As opposed to playing casinos.
But still, sports books only happen in like a certain amount of states.
It's true. You know what's actually going to be interesting is the esports betting. That's going to be huge. It already is huge.
Really?
Valve or Steam, which is like a platform where you can just download games and play them on there. I guess you can, I don't know exactly how it works, but you can use these like earn these like points or something to bet against each other. And it's massive. But I know that Nevada, I think there's some sports books in Nevada that might actually start hosting bets or have started hosting bets for esports.
There you go. Something more to curtail by the government.
Yeah.
They'll get it. Yeah, I got to wrap it up. I got to take off back to work.
Yeah, wonderful conversation, though. This was, it was a great conversation.
Yeah, I had fun. It was too short. I could talk all day.
You'll be back for round two.
See you on part two.
Yeah, round two will be
2017.
Your topic of your choice.
Topic of my choice.
Topic of your choice. 2017.
Get your list ready.
Entire podcast about boobs. Just
if you can show me that you're an expert on boobs.
If you can commit to that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you can commit to that.
I'm kidding, but I thought that would be hilarious.
Wasn't that the one topic that was off limits? Boobs.
I could fill up an entire decaf.
I can't. No. Yeah. Boobs are my shit.
Wonderful. Well. Speaking for all of our guests, for me, for Brandon, it was a fantastic conversation. Excited to have you back. Is there anywhere that this is your time to promote yourself. So anything that your projects you're working on, anything that you want to share with the people and any way for them to reach you, follow you, etc.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Ruthless, R-O-O-T-H-L-U-S. And then, it was like an Xbox Live moniker. I like smoked some weed and I was like, I'm going to think of a cool name. And that was it. And then it just carried over to Poker Stars and people's just like,
that's your identity now.
Yeah.
You're known in the poker community.
Like, they call me Ruth and whatever. But, and then, also, on Instagram, follow me at Socialtron Live, which is, also like, that's like the, kind of the event, like I'm doing the events in LA. That's for like just like viewing parties and hopefully maybe we'll run some tournaments or something for esports, maybe Rocket League, I don't know, we'll see. That would be dope. Love Rocket League. But just Socialtron Live at Instagram and Ruthless on Twitter.
Cool. Any projects you want to share? Well, that you just did, thank you, appreciate that. I know it's slipping. I'm gonna need another sip of coffee. Okay, we're done here.
All right,
yeah,
cheers guys.
Thanks for having me guys.
Happy New Year.
Woo! That's it. Done. Finished. Ready for release. Adam, thanks for coming on. People, if you want to find Adam, connect with him. You can find him at Ruthless. That's R-O-O-T-H-L-E-S-S. Head over to the website as well, onthebuspodcast.com. Check out other places, download the show, and check out all of our sponsors and affiliates. And big thanks and shout out for everybody who's been purchasing on the Amazon store, some Organifi, some Onnit products. We love you. We thank you. We don't have to do all those things, but we appreciate it because we're the bus, you're on the bus. Have a good one, everybody. Cheers.
For those who...